Welcome to the PEDS-NP, Pearls of Pediatric Evidence-Based Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Becky Carson, pediatric nurse practitioner and clinical assistant professor at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. In our last episode, we talked about nirsevimab, a wonderful new monoclonal antibody vaccine for the prevention of severe RSV disease in infants. But in this episode, we're going to discuss the discharge education and anticipatory guidance for caregivers whose unlucky babies already have bronchiolitis. Before we get into this episode, you might enjoy listening to some prior episodes of the PEDS-NP all about bronchiolitis. In episode 56 in season 8, we talk about respiratory virus testing and the specifics of who really needs RSV testing, based on risk factors for severe disease. Then rewind back to season 3 and listen to episode 25, where we discuss the tricky realities and provider practice variation that often ignore our national guidelines on bronchiolitis. And as you make decisions on disposition on respiratory distress, listen to season 2, episode 15, to decide who needs admission and who's safe to go home. Lastly, in the unfortunate case of hospitalization, episode 32 in season 4 reviews bronchiolitis in the hospitalized patient. After that mini refresher course, join us back here and we'll talk about how to talk to parents whose children don't meet admission criteria and prepare them to take care of their infants at home. As we all know, bronchiolitis is a viral acute lower respiratory tract infection, most commonly caused by RSV, but implicated by a number of viruses. And it causes lower airway obstruction through necrosis and epithelial sloughing that produces a characteristic wheeze. It predominantly affects infants and toddlers in winter months, peaking in infants ages 2 to 6 months. There are 150 million new cases worldwide each year, where recent data shows 57,000 U.S. hospital admissions annually, 20% of which will require intensive care. While not all infants need to be admitted, it doesn't mean that they're not sick. And that's part of what the communication with the family needs to include. The validation that their child is enduring a gnarly, uncomfortable illness, and that you want to help them get through this self-limited illness without severe complications, such as respiratory distress or dehydration. It's important to understand my personal practice style before we begin talking about discharge education. You see, I'm a minimalist, and I believe in capacity-building, family-centered care. What does that even mean? It means that I can't remember the last time I sent an RSV test because most of my patients don't fit criteria for testing where it would change my management. But I spend extra time with families to make sure they understand three things. One, the underlying disease pathology in a way that they can understand it. Two, individualized supportive care practices in detail. And three, yep, you guessed it, specific quantifiable return criteria for disease progression or complications, all so that they can confidently take care of their child in the best place for them, their home. Most of my visits are spent discussing discharge care because I can identify the illness script and confirm on physical exam in about 2 minutes. I'm not bragging about my diagnostic prowess. I'm bragging about how much time I spend talking with families about what is normal, what is abnormal, and I help them feel comfortable taking their child home. Because not every child warrants admission. And if the family isn't comfortable, they're gonna come back, which becomes burdensome to your workflow, especially when no new management needs to occur. But if you've armed the family with specific, actionable items that they can do at home, you can trust that a representation is appropriate, indicative of progression of illness or complications that warrant your attention. And this is especially valuable since bronchiolitis is worst on days 3 through 5. And that's part of my warning to families. If this is day 3, I warn them that despite all their efforts, their child will likely worsen over the next 2 days or so before they start to show gradual improvement. If they're offering excellent supportive care at home, I can trust that a representation should be taken seriously. And sometimes, despite their best efforts, some babies do need additional care in the hospital, like supplemental oxygen, airway support, or hydration. And that's not their fault. We're here to help make that decision. Oftentimes, though, I just have to tell parents they're doing a good job. They're not crazy. This is a very long illness. But you're doing all the right things, and you just need to stay the course with supportive care. Here's some extra tricks. You're doing a great job. So for the rest of the episode, I'm going to pretend that I'm talking to the caregiver of an infant with bronchiolitis for 3 days so that I can share with you my monologue on bronchiolitis discharge education, explaining the disease in a way they can understand, what they can do for their infant, and when to seek care again. For all practical purposes, let's assume this is a benign presentation in a 6-month infant, born full term, without any major medical conditions. Immunizations are up to date, but the shortage of the RSV vaccine meant that the infant didn't get a dose of the monoclonal antibody this year. On exam, the infant appears vigorous, well hydrated, and in no apparent distress. There's copious clear nasal discharge, but the TMs appear pearly gray with normal bony prominences and light reflexes. Lung exam, as expected, reveals coarse lung sounds with mild expiratory wheezing and transient upper airway congestion. There are very mild subcostal retractions and mild tachypnea, but no other increased work of breathing, and no focality to suggest pneumonia. Vital signs are within normal limits, and with normal oxygen saturations, I deem this infant suitable for discharge home. So now, here's how I communicate the coming days with the family, knowing that I'm not their primary care provider or medical home. So you might use different phrasing if you're their PCP or their home office. So your baby has bronchiolitis, which is just a fancy word for you're a baby with a cold virus, and that virus causes a lot of mucus and wheezing. But this wheezing is different from asthma, because unlike asthma that needs albuterol to open it up, no medicine is going to make this go away. This wheezing is caused by mucus blocking their teeny tiny airways. So since your baby is so little and doesn't have strong chest muscles like you and me to cough and blow out their nose, we have to help get the mucus out by sucking it out. And I personally think that bulb you're using isn't worth the plastic it's made of, but I love nasal aspirators like the Nose Frida. If you think about it, that bulb has a volume that's about as big as your fist. That's not that much sucking power. But when you use an aspirator, the volume to suck is as big as your lungs. See how much stronger and better that is? You have so much more suction power to get out that mucus. And this mucus can be really thick, so it's important to keep it as thin as possible with saline. I'm a really big fan of those spray cans. Just give it a good 1/1000, 2/1000 in the nostril, and then suck it back out. On my daughter, I have even been known to be so daring as to spray it in one nostril as I suck it out the other nostril. And I know it sounds gross, but trust me, it is very gratifying to see how much you can get out and actually see that your child is breathing more comfortably. And I'm not lying to you. They are not going to like this process, but the aspirator is easier to use with just one hand so that you can hold a squirmy baby. And if they really hate it, I will lay the baby down on the floor with my legs over their body and their little face between my knees, and then I'll suck them out. And that's another reason that I like the Frida, is because it has this really blunt tip, so it's not going to go deep into their nose. It's not going to poke them or cause irritation. And there is not too frequent a number of times you can suction. If they need it, do it. If you hear mucus rattling around or if you notice trouble breathing, go ahead and suction. It's also important to suction before they lay down to sleep and before they feed, because if they can't breathe through their nose, they are not going to feed. And hydration is one of the major goals of getting through bronchiolitis. We want your baby to stay hydrated and take at least 50% of their normal feeds. So for babies that are formula fed, I usually suggest suctioning and then offer their normal formula volume. So if they usually take 6 ounces, but they only take 3, I'll offer the remaining volume in Pedialyte, because Pedialyte is kind of like Gatorade for babies. It's thinner, it's easier to swallow than formula. It doesn't make this thick mucus in the back of their throat like formula does, and it has the perfect balance of salts and sugars to keep them hydrated. The Pedialyte package says that you shouldn't use it under a year or to ask your doctor. I'm here and I'm saying it's okay. The reason it says that is because they don't want parents to give Pedialyte instead of formula over and over again, because Pedialyte doesn't contain any protein or fat and therefore won't help a baby grow if you give it all the time. But when they're sick, it's definitely the best thing for hydrating, which is what our goal is right now. Don't worry if your baby doesn't want solids for a few days. That is totally fine. That's not going to keep them from growing, because at this point, losing weight would mean that they're dehydrated. So we really need to focus on fluids. You'll notice that when they're better, they're going to make up for lost time and eat you out of house and home in those solids. But for now, we're really just focusing on fluids. For moms that are breastfeeding, you don't really need to do Pedialyte because breast milk is thinner than formula, and it also contains all those great antibodies that are going to help baby get better faster. You might notice that baby is taking smaller, more frequent feeds, and that's actually perfect because that four milk, that's the milk that comes out right when you start to let down, it's mostly water, so it's for hydrating. It's that end feed that has the thicker, calorie-dense milk. That's called hind milk. But that's not really our goal right now, just like solids are not our goal. So especially if baby is still able and interested in latching, giving multiple little 5-minute snacks over and over again just to keep them hydrated is actually perfect. So for moms that are breastfeeding, it might be harder to quantify whether you're getting 50% of normal feeds. But I always say that if you don't have that uncomfortable feeling of fullness where you're like, uh-oh, I need to pump, then that means that you're doing a good job. If you need to pump about once a day, then I think we need to push fluids and do a better job. And if you're needing to pump twice a day, then it means that we're probably getting below that 50% mark. And there are some times that I'll even try and feed babies with a syringe just to get a few milliliters at a time. And keep in mind that even though this is a virus and there's no medicine to make it go away, your baby will get better all on their own, that Tylenol and ibuprofen can be really helpful tools with helping to reduce fever and help make them more comfortable. Because when the baby is comfortable, that's when they're most likely to drink. The back of the Tylenol and ibuprofen boxes are notoriously inaccurate, and they don't know the weight of your baby. So I'm going to make sure you go home with a weight-based dose of Tylenol and ibuprofen today. I know you're wondering about cough medicines. So Hylands and Zarbies and Mommy's Bliss all make baby cough medicine formulations. Backwards and forwards, they are expensive, they are a waste of your money, do not buy them. Spend that hard-earned money on the things that are actually going to make a difference and help your baby get through this, like Afrida and saline. And here's the most important thing I can tell you today. You're doing a good job. Your baby is well hydrated. You're doing a good job of getting the snot out. Keep up the good work. We've added some extra tools to help you do a better job of it. It can be really maddening that they keep getting worse despite all the things you're doing. I'm going to warn you, everyone in the house is going to sleep terribly for the next couple of days. It's going to be a rough week. We know that the peak of illness is days 3 through 5. So since you're just entering day 3, we actually expect it to get worse before it gets better. And now you have those extra tools in your arsenal of battling this virus at home. But if things get weird or worrisome, we are here for that. I want to see baby back if you notice difficulty breathing that doesn't improve after suction. So if you notice flaring of the nose, pulling under the ribs, pulling in between the ribs, use that saline and suction. And if it doesn't make it look better in a few minutes, come back. If your baby is not taking at least 50% of their regular breastfeeding or formula, even after trying Pedialyte, or you're seeing less than 3 wet diapers in a 24-hour period, come back to see me. And since it's my job to think about the worst-case scenario, call 911 if your baby turns blue or purple in the face or stops breathing for 20 seconds. And since we expect things to get worse over the next couple days, it'd be a good idea to just go ahead and schedule a follow-up appointment with your primary care provider for a checkup in the next 2 or 3 days. Okay, I know that was a lot. Tell me what questions you have. When all is said and done, capacity building, where you arm the family with the skills and knowledge to care for their infant at home, will triple your time investment because they will carry those skills forward to the next illness, which is only a couple of weeks away. I hope that you'll like, comment, and subscribe to the Peds NP, where we discuss the practical application of evidence-based practice in a conversational way that helps you synthesize and transform the best practices from the literature to your clinical bedside skills. Share it with a colleague, pass it along to your classmates, text it to a friend. There is no financial support or conflict of interest in this episode of the Peds NP. You can see show notes and references at thepedsnp.com. Follow me on Instagram at thepedsnppodcast. And remember, this isn't just a podcast. Good family education builds skills that will make your future self say thank you. I'm Becky Carson. Take care.